The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome back to the post-Thanksgiving episode of the Pride of Detroit PODcast, where we are all just a little bit fatter, both on meat and vegetables and a little bit on football. Unfortunately, that third item there might have given a few of us indigestion as well. We're going to talk about it here. Pride of Detroit. Pride of Detroit. P-O-D. At Pride of Detroit on Twitter. Pride of Detroit on Facebook. PrideofDetroit.com. That's what I was reaching for there when I kept trying to say Pride of Detroit. My brain has like half shut down as we sit here on the weekend after the Lions played, and we're going to fill you in on that and so much more. But first, let's introduce the crew back from the holidays. We usually record immediately after a game. This time didn't happen because, well, we had holidays. We had family. We had food. I didn't. I'm Chris Perfett, the adequate host at Chris Perfett, P-E-R-F-E-T-T. My Thanksgiving consisted of deli turkey, box mac and cheese, but I made my own pumpkin pie, and it was delicious. Living that bum lifestyle right now. Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader at Detroit Online, was definitely busy with his Thanksgiving.
Yes, I was. I had two plates before the game even started. Thank you to the Lions media, which apparently I'm not supposed to be taking food from because that's a bribe. And then had myself.
They do that. It's a bribe, but it's accepted across all of media.
I know.
As someone in politics once said, you feed the media so they ask less questions.
Well, that sounds like a bribe.
It's courtesy. It's a courtesy bribe.
But yeah, no, my Thanksgiving, I had a very good Thanksgiving despite the game, which we'll get into. But
well, I've got one big question for you because we were talking about it before we started up. You ate that Thanksgiving pizza.
You damn right I did.
At Ford Field.
And you know what? It was delicious. I'm sorry. I think Zack Snyder put it best. It's kind of just like you have all that leftover food on your plate and you're not sure what to do with it. So you take a roll and you just swipe it all up, shove it in your mouth. It worked.
I'm just saying, the
sweetness of the cranberry sauce worked with the saltiness of the turkey and the gravy. And I was surprised as anyone because it did not look good to me. But I gave it a 7.5 out of 10. I would eat it again.
You're no longer allowed to complain about pineapple on pizza or non-tomato sauces or anything like that.
I'm always an inclusive person with food. I don't know where people get this idea that I don't think people should enjoy certain foods. I like the weird foods. The only one that I won't touch is the Coney Island pizza because that combines a bunch of stuff that's a little bit much.
I think I've shown you guys the mustard pizza in New York as well.
Yeah, I won't touch that.
Yeah, well, that's more of a... Anyway, Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan_POD, he survived the holidays only to come back with his nose just bleeding. So just hoping he's all right now.
Yeah, I mean, nosebleeds are just a part of life for me. Apparently not for you, Chris, because
I've never had a nosebleed
in your entire life. Yeah,
I've never had a nosebleed. I've never looked at a sexy woman. I've never looked at an anime and just fountains of blood squirting out of my nose or whatever has caused these things.
I don't get the reference, but I appreciate it. But yeah, so I don't know. It was a happy Thanksgiving. Spent time with friends, spent time with family, spent some time doing a little bit of shopping. So
that's
the only
cool
part. The only part that was bad was the part that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, well, before we get into that, speaking of brawls, did you get any Black Friday stories we're going to have later?
No brawls. Didn't even really see anything all that interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, the only thing that was interesting was the flatulence that my friend was letting go.
Oh, my God.
In the Target that we're in, so we kept on trying to get away from him.
Well, speaking of flatulence... Detroit Lions.
I keep on trying to segue, and you finally took the bait.
Detroit Lions 16, Chicago Bears 23. After a Thanksgiving game that was fairly competitive, which saw the Lions ahead in the third quarter, and then that fourth quarter was the real third quarter as things completely fell apart. Matt Stafford throws two picks, including one for 6 points. And we'll get to that in a second. Second segment, we're talking specifically about Matt Stafford. But I want to talk about the rest of this game first before that bloviated turkey takes center stage. So this is all the sides we're working on right now. We're working on the leftovers. Immediate reactions from the game, Jeremy.
Well, I put this out on Twitter after the game, and I think I still stand by it, you know, 48, 72 hours, however later it is now. I think this was the best game the Lions have played since Miami. And granted, the first half was ugly from both sides. And I think Chase Daniel could have made this a bigger deficit and could have made the Lions look a lot worse if he played better.
Isn't that horrifying to think about? Another backup quarterback could have made it even worse.
Sure, absolutely. But at the same time, the game didn't play out all that differently than I expected, except for one thing, which we'll get into in a minute. The Lions played a very conservative game offensively, like I thought they would. They got sacked 6 times, so they're like, all right, we better get the ball out real quick for Matthew Stafford so that he doesn't get sacked, he doesn't fumble the ball, he doesn't try to force something into tight coverage. So they relied heavily on Bruce Ellington, Theo Riddick. Those guys combined for 13 catches. It worked in a sense that while the Lions weren't moving the ball well, it was stretching out possessions. It was winning the field position battle early. It was preventing them from losing a lot of yards and having a lot of negative plays and keeping kind of the Khalil Max at bay. And that's why we were stuck with a 9-7 ugly first half. The Lions essentially were playing like, okay, if we don't make a mistake on offense, we have a chance in this one. And that's how the game played out pretty much. And then the only odd thing to me is that in the second half, the Lions kind of opened things up offensively and it started to work. And they were in a position to win the game. 6 minutes left, Bears 40-yard or their own 40-yard line, first down, and then all the Matthew Stafford stuff happened. And we're going to get into that a little bit later. But the game didn't play out all that differently than I expected, other than the fact that the Lions were able to run the ball, which we can get to in a minute.
Ryan, Chase Daniels ends this game 27 for 37, 230 yards, 2 touchdowns, a passer rating of 107. Definitely not Matt Flynn, but what did you see from the Lions defense that allowed them to? Because once again, the Lions defense stopped Chicago on the ground, like completely, only 38 yards rushing. Tariq Cohen, Jordan Howard, neither of them had days to write home about, so. Was it the Bears just kind of keeping in this by taking apart the Lions? It wasn't even taking apart the Lions secondary. It was the two defensive touchdowns at the end of the game. But what did you see from the Lions defense?
Yeah, I think the Lions defense, the thing that was able to dictate the game more than anything, and I think that this person deserves the most credit out of anybody, is Matt Nagy. Like, I thought that coming in on a short week without your starting quarterback, going to Chase Daniels, it was
singular.
Singular. It kept on confusing me because they have James Daniels, who's their starting center or guard. I forget which position he was playing, but yeah.
I was about to say, because I think I remember a Chase Daniels somewhere else, and I don't know why now.
Yeah. But anyways, I really think that Matt Nagy deserved a lot of credit for, the pick play, which which, you know, ostensibly looked like, you know, Allen Robinson was trying to just set up in a spot to catch a ball. And I thought Matt Nagy just did a really good job of calling this game. And, you know, the run game wasn't working. I thought the Lions did a pretty good job, like you mentioned, of bottling up the run game. So Matt Nagy decided to put the, this is going to sound terrible, but he decided to put the ball in Chase Daniels' hands. And that's how the Bears were able to win the game. So kudos to Matt Nagy for putting together a game plan to beat the Lions.
Yep, beat the Lions. And that's, I mean, where did this game kind of really fall? I mean, without just saying Matt Stafford right now, because we have a whole segment to go on Matt Stafford, where did you guys see this game kind of fall apart? Because, like, the Bears absolutely kept pace with the Lions fairly well and did set us up for the collapse there. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm still deciphering this one, so I'm looking to you guys for, and I'm the host here, adequately, so I'm looking to you guys, like, for answers on this. How did the Bears end up sealing this one?
Jeremy, I want you to get to your thoughts on this real quick, but I do want to say that I agree with you that I thought this was probably the best game that the Lions had played since Miami. And we keep alluding to talking about Matthew Stafford later on, but I think
five
really
more minutes.
I think the big unpinning of the Lions on Thursday was Matthew Stafford and the costly turnovers that he's made. But then again, this isn't the first time that we've talked about that this season. You know, go back to the Seattle game the week after Miami. A couple of costly turnovers by Matthew Stafford end up, you know, really deciding the game. So I think a lot of what Matthew Stafford did on Thursday was what undid the Lions.
To me, there's no question about it. You look at the way the trajectory that game was going. The Lions had scored a touchdown and a field goal. They were outscoring the Bears 9-0 in the second half. They'd forced punt. Actually, the Bears had a touchdown in there. Sorry. So they're outscoring them 9-7 in the second half. But basically, they had forced almost three straight three and outs in the second half. They were controlling that game. Their decision to basically play very safe on offense and, you know, put it in Chase Daniels' hands was working. It was a very conservative play style, but it worked. And the only way that plan doesn't work is if you turn the ball over. And with the Lions having a chance to win that game with 6 minutes left, they turned the ball over, and that was the one thing they couldn't do. And even after they turned the ball over, they were still in the game, and they were about to tie the game. And, you know, who knows what happens if the Lions do score on that last drive. Maybe they gave too much time to the Bears, and Chase Daniel would come back and score the game-winning field goal or whatever. But to me, the Lions were controlling that game in the second half. It didn't fall apart for them. They blew it.
All right, real quick, let's just dive right into it here. We'll take a break here in a second. But first, one, two minutes for the standouts from this game, though. LeGarrette Blount turning back the hands of time, 88 yards rushing on the ground, two touchdowns, looked phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about controlling the game, that's the way they did it. In the first half, he wasn't very good. He was kind of the same guy that we saw, but I have no idea what happened in the second
half.
We
had to all eat our words on LeGarrette Blount, because I thought, okay, here comes in, just I'm ready to replace -2 yards rushing LeGarrette Blount with -2 yards rushing Zach Zenner.
Yeah, and I was calling for it too, and I am not a Zach Zenner fan, to be clear.
No, that's the point of mine either. I hate him, but like, he did a miraculous thing on the ground, almost 100 yards rushing. Like, it was amazing.
Yeah,
Kenny
Golladay.
Really
quick on Blount too. Like,
yeah,
worth noting the defense that he was going up against. This is one of the best defenses in the league, especially at defending the run. The only other running back who's even come close to 100 yards is another guy who's beating Father Time. That's Frank Gore, I think he had 101 rushing yards. So,
well, Frank,
odd
Gore's
to me that the Bears have allowed almost 200 yard rushers, and they were both guys that are over 35 or over 30.
We found the Bears' weakness, old man's strength. Maybe Barry Sanders should have suited up that day. Kenny Golladay, again, another standout, 90 yards there, looking fantastic again, doing highlight dumb stuff. And then Mike Ford, who, again, I thought was brought in just due to nepotism, you know, obviously related to the Ford family. Instead, he's been the surprising strength in a flailing Lions defensive back unit.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to make of Mike Ford yet. I mean, he was hailed when he was brought in as an undrafted rookie, as a guy who has all the measurables, you know, really good RAS guy, a guy who can run with the best of them. But obviously, as an undrafted rookie, there are a lot of issues there. His instincts, his ability to read plays, his football IQ, that sort of stuff. But you have to say, like, his first two starts now were pretty impressive. He was far from perfect, and there were some tackling issues and things like that, but he made a really good read on a screen pass, got a tackle for loss. He broke up a play on a play he was step-for-step with the receiver. And we're not used to seeing those sort of things out of Lions cornerbacks this year. So he very well may be the Lions' second-best cornerback already, which is a good thing for him, but not a good thing for the team. And I don't think it lessens this team's need for a number two cornerback. I think Mike Ford would be a great guy to bring off the bench. But at the same time, some of the issues that he's dealing with right now are things that are teachable. So if Lions' coaching staff is truly as good as they led us to believe at the beginning of the year, maybe Mike Ford does have, you know, a playing role in this team's future. But for now, I think he's fine for the rest of the year, because I don't really have any desire to see Tez Tabor, who we should also probably mention was inactive as a healthy scratch in this game for the first time. But, you know, I'm cool with Mike Ford for right now, until he eventually, like every other Lions cornerback, fails me.
Yeah, he's just playing with that can't go back strength, I think. Let's take that quick break, because we do want to talk Matt Stafford, however you want to say his name. The real star of the Thanksgiving debacle, and we will be right back here on the Pride of Detroit PODcast. Pride of Detroit PODcast. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, not even iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Find us on the two entities that are controlling your life. And Spotify. Let's talk about Matt Stafford. Because, as we've alluded to last segment, this game was decidedly very close. Decidedly very, very, very much so in the hands of Matt Stafford to win this game. And then he throws two interceptions at the end of the game. Two very bad interceptions. And at least one, I mean, I will give you this, that the Kyle Fuller interception that he caught in the second one in the end zone, maybe you can place a lot of that blame onto Michael Roberts, who appeared to have just not run the route he was supposed to. But the first one, the Eddie Jackson one that goes back 41 yards for a touchdown, hoo-wee!
Well,
that's a cue for someone to talk there.
I was going to say, in the true spirit of Thanksgiving, why don't we pass around the dishes of blame to everybody involved in some of those plays? I mean, Eddie Jackson talked about post-game how the Bears had noticed in film session that whenever Roberts was lined up where he was on the field for that play, that he was running like a route to the flat, and he was immediately able to just jump that play. So, I mean, yeah, bad decision by Matthew Stafford, but once again, another example of Jim Bob Cooter just being completely and totally predictable when it comes to his offense.
Yeah, I was going to bring up that point as well, but I think it ultimately comes down to you can't make that throw.
Oh, yeah, execution, for sure.
You got to know that Eddie Jackson, there's probably not a lot of safeties that are able to make that play, considering where Eddie Jackson started. You know, he's basically starting, you know, middle of the field, playing center field, and is able to reach an out route that immediately breaks. Normal human beings shouldn't be able to do that, but if you follow Eddie Jackson's career, you know he's one of the best safeties in the league, one of the most underrated players, I think, in the league. And Stafford didn't even see him. Like, you watch that play over and over again, you can tell Stafford doesn't see him. I don't know if he thought someone else was on him. I don't know if he thought Eddie Jackson was playing deep safety, but he didn't see him. And to make a mistake like that, not only resulting in a pick six, but also on first down, when you're tied with 6 minutes left, almost at midfield already, that just compounds the reasons why you can't make that throw and you have to tuck it in. And granted, it's a very quick decision. And to me, long term, does this affect my opinion of Matthew Stafford? Probably not. But like you mentioned before, this is not the first time he's made some bad second half mistakes that cost the Lions games. Now, the one against Seattle, I think, is a little more forgivable because the Lions were in a desperate situation, down two scores most of that second half. This one is a lot harder to defend to me, because it's just such a critical point in the game where it's tied, where it could go either way, but you're carrying all of the weight here. I almost said momentum, but I'm not going to. But I mean, this is, the Lions were really in a position to take control of this game, and it's hard to blame anyone other than Stafford, at least on the pick six.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's hard enough to stress at that point too, that what was this? I'm trying to remember. This game is now all incredibly very muddled in my head. I mean, at that point, I mean, yeah, the two teams are tied. You just forced the Bears, their last drive. I'm looking at this and I'm shocked, but now that I'm seeing the numbers, they went only three and out for minus 4 yards. Like, yeah, you're playing with fire at that point. You just tied it up with a field goal. Like, there's a chance to, like, do this, to make Thanksgiving, to, like, you know, retain your strength, retain your winning on Thanksgiving, not go 0-2 against a divisional rival. And, yeah, you do that in the first play of that drive. It's real cool. Like, at that point, like, you could tell that stadium was just completely deflated by that.
Yeah, I mean, there were moments early on in the game, like on possessions, where the crowd was clearly just not on the Lions' side. Like, early on in the game, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeremy, but it came through on television on my end, where, like, either decisions to, there were some decisions that I can't quite recall the exact specifics of, but not, like, just not being aggressive or going for it on fourth and short.
Ward Field's a tough crowd. It really is.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just special. I mean, yeah, I understand that they're short on patience. And I mean, when it comes to where the Lions are this season, like, the, you know, the position that they, you know, put themselves in with, you know, being 4-6, like, I mean, I get it, but.
Well, I don't think it's just because of where they are this year. I would say, like, all time now, like, Ford Field's reputation now is basically, unless the Lions are doing well in this moment, they will get booed.
Yeah, I think the "in this moment" part is probably the most important thing you said there.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they could be 10-0 and they make a bad mistake or a silly decision, coaching or playing, you know, personnel wise, and
the fans that honest.
The fans start to turn, and I think that perfectly dovetails into what we want to talk about with Matthew Stafford too.
Yeah, let's get into it a little bit, because he's taking some real heat. Like, this is maybe the most that I've seen from the Lions fan base in finally turning to, like, seriously considering life without Matthew Stafford. And,
well, yeah, because he's got a huge contract. He's now, what, 30? Is it just 30?
He just turned over to 31, I want to say, but either way, okay. Let's just throw out the trade talk for this offseason, because it's not going to happen.
No one's going to buy that contract.
All of that regardless, it doesn't matter, because it costs you more to send him away this year or this offseason than to keep him. It literally costs you more. So yeah, There's no point in even discussing it. It's not going to happen. It's not smart GMing. Matthew Stafford's going to be around for 2019. If you want to broach the subject of moving on from Matthew Stafford, I'm willing to discuss it next year. But there's no point in it now. And I'm still of the ilk that Matthew Stafford is well above the bar for Super Bowl winning quarterback. I think he's still very talented. I know he's prone to mistakes. He's always been prone to mistakes. He's been better at it recently. So I do think this is a bit of an outlier year. But he's never going to be perfect. He's never going to be top tier. He's never going to be top five. He just isn't. And I don't think you need a top five quarterback in this league to win a championship. I don't think that you need a quarterback on a rookie deal, like everyone seems to think is so easy to do, to win a championship. I think you can build a team around a quarterback that is costly. We see the Saints do it pretty easily all the time with Drew Brees, and they're competitive every year, and they look damn good this year. and I know Matthew Stafford isn't Drew Brees, but I'm just proving the point that spending a lot on a quarterback does not mean you're screwed. And I understand people are frustrated. I understand Matthew Stafford has never reached the level that I think some of us thought he was at some point in his career, but he's good enough. And the NFL salary cap is silly. You can build a team around a big contract. It happens all the time. The Patriots do it. I don't like the armchair general managing that it's just like, okay, get rid of Matthew Stafford. Let's start over. Let's get a rookie quarterback in here. We'll find our Patrick Mahomes and suddenly we'll be the Chiefs. That's not how it usually works. That is an aberration.
Yeah, it's definitely, especially in the fact that Mahomes was like passed over by quite a few teams as well. Need I remind people on that? No one going into that draft, no one thought Mahomes was the best quarterback in that draft. That draft that I can't even remember who's in that draft now. Either way, like I will say on Stafford, like to get my own opinion in here, which is always a recipe for success, apparently. I think we're reaching the point though that we have some good years of Stafford, but it's still in a minority compared to some of the years where he's been very mistake prone. And yeah, like as Jeremy said, you can overcome that if you have a better team around you. Like, I mean, my God, the Ravens won a Super Bowl with Joe Flacco.
Right.
But
and Trent Dilfer.
And Trent Dilfer, yes. But I don't think the Lions are absolutely not built like that to overcome those kind of things. Like they just don't have, as we're going to talk a lot in the offseason too, like there's too many pieces missing now from the Detroit Lions. We kind of talked about it, that we kind of had this weird Ertz fool's gold going into the year where you had the Jim Caldwell records making this team look pretty good. But underlying that was the fact that the Lions were just breaking off piece and piece and piece by the year until what we have here in 2018. So, I mean, there's a lot to fix there, and Stafford absolutely does not do you favors. But at the same time, yeah, you're kind of stuck with him for the immediate future. And I think, I don't know, I don't know where his ceiling is right now, but Ryan, like, I know these mistakes are going to frustrate people, but how far do you see the Lions really going with Stafford at this point? Because, like, I think, I hate to do it right after this game, because again, we've talked about it before, this Bears defense is a killer defense.
Right.
But I think we can also place that the loss of the game squarely on Stafford's shoulders. It's hard to find another game where you can easily look to Stafford as being the reason you lost that game.
Yeah, lots of things. And I thought the piece that Kyle Meinke wrote for MLive was pretty illuminating too, because I think what we also need to consider is heading into the season, I think a lot of us could point to the Lions offensive skill position players and say that with the supporting cast that was around him, like the Lions were going to be right in line for success. Like we thought that, you know, Matthew Stafford would have another fine year because he had Golden Tate, Marvin Jones, Kenny Galladay, and, you know, in his second season, the addition of a run game, which is the one thing that it seems like everybody was waiting for Matthew Stafford to have, right? Because it was the one thing that he hadn't had yet in his career, which a lot of people have associated with his success as a passer. Like if he only had a run game, like Matthew Stafford would be one of these elite quarterbacks. And I still think that I agree with Jeremy that I still think that a team with Matthew Stafford as their quarterback is not only in every game, but he can be like a Super Bowl winning quarterback. I do believe that. But at the same time, like he also is a quarterback that could play you out of a game. And he's done that multiple times this season. He's done this in the past. It's not really fair to judge him by like what the market value of a quarterback is either. So like
no, market value is screwed on quarterbacks right now for sure.
Yes. So I kind of just want to throw that out. Like people keep on bringing up like he's getting paid this much to be your friend. Like Jeremy already said, Like, you're not, you know how difficult it is to find a franchise quarterback at the top of the draft? Like, how often that happens? I mean, talk to all the teams that drafted quarterbacks at the top of this draft. Tell me how they're doing. Tell me how the Jets are doing.
Well, can I bring this up? Because I think we were talking about this before the show. I know Jeremy was talking about how back in 08, 09, when they did draft Stafford, people were like, oh, no, we should just pass, you know. Probably this is probably some anti-SEC Big Ten Midwest bullshit going on here, but people weren't too high up on Stafford and said we should pass over and wait because there's another great draft class coming with Colt McCoy and Sam Bradford.
No, I mean, I there was definitely a contingency of people that wanted the Lions to draft Aaron Curry.
Sure. And I just think the overall point, though, is just drafting quarterbacks is a lot harder than some teams are making it seem right now. Like,
hey, let's call Philadelphia and see how happy they are with Carson Wentz right now.
Great. Right. And I mean, just and I think look at the dots connecting the very successful, and I'm putting very in quotation marks here, successful young quarterbacks. We've got Patrick Mahomes.
God.
Hold on.
God.
We've got to a much lesser extent, Mitchell Trubisky, and we've got
system.
Jared Goff.
Meh.
System.
No.
Yes.
Mahomes is a god.
They're both the chief system, him and Trubisky. And the reason those guys are
Mahomes is a god.
Succeeding is because they've adopted these innovative, interesting, high potent offenses and offensive minded coaches, and the Lions don't have that.
They don't have that, and then they don't have something else too that I thought was really interesting that Mikey brought up. Like, the Lions don't have a single wide receiver or tight end that measures out as like a player that creates separation. Like, they don't have a single skill position player when it comes to receiver or tight end ranked among the top 100 players in separation for the season. Like, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Like, because I can imagine how many players there are in those, like, for the Chiefs or even for, you know, the Rams. They have players on those teams that can do that. Now, one very important part of that is having a player that can do that. Another very important part of that is having an offensive mind or a scheme, like you said, that can scheme guys getting open and creating separation and things like that. So, those are two very like non-Matthew Stafford controlled things, right? Like, he can't control who the coach is and who's like scheming up the, you know, the offense. And he doesn't get to shop for the groceries. So I can't help but think about 2016 and think about how Matthew Stafford was so entirely responsible, of course, with the help of, you know, some very talented guys like Chris loves him, some Anquan Boldin.
Yeah, God, he was the secret sauce. Like, I keep telling you, like, because this team was struggling a lot in red zone offense before and after Anquan Boldin. Anquan Boldin was exactly what Stafford needed to get into the red zone. And yeah, the Lions don't really have anything like that. You saw a little bit of Michael Roberts working out that way back during the Miami game. But before and after that, without that red zone threat, like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Because, like, and yeah, we've talked about this before. Now I don't know if Tate Ebron, sorry, let me silence my phone there. I don't know if Tate Ebron sizes up to some of these other threats out there that these teams, especially Kansas City, have put together over the years when it comes to what you're talking about, Ryan. But I do think getting rid of Ebron and Tate definitely makes it harder to shop for the groceries later on when, as we've alluded to many times, there's a lot of work that still needs to be done on this defense.
And a lot.
I want to go back to a couple of Ryan's points really, really quick, because he brought up a lot of really good, interesting things to talk about there. And I want to go back. When I said Jared Goff is a system quarterback, I mean that system matches his skill set. And that's what I want to talk about, because Matthew Stafford has a skill set and it's not dinking and dunking for 5 yards. But Jim Bob Cooter plus the personnel meant that they had to do that against the Bears. Their offensive line obviously got worked by the Chicago Bears a couple weeks ago. So they're like, all right, we have to compensate. And by compensating, they took away all of Matthew Stafford's best qualities, which is going deep, which is fitting things in the turkey hole, which is reading defenses deep. And we saw that in 2011. We saw it to lesser yes, turkey hole. We saw it to a lesser extent last year too, because the Lions were hitting on a lot of big plays. They're not even trying big plays anymore. And that is, I mean, say what you want about Matthew Stafford and some of the mistakes he's making, but it's on the coaching staff and the general manager for not getting the personnel and scheme to match their talent. Matthew Stafford is the guy you're paying $27 million or $25 million a year for. Why aren't you building a team around him? Because they aren't. They're building a running game. Why?
Yeah.
Passing, because play action, let's be clear, play action is no more effective when you have a good running game. There are plenty of studies on this. You go and Google it. It's true. So adding a running game has nothing to do with Matthew Stafford. It does not make him a better quarterback. It does not make him better on play action. It doesn't make anything. It doesn't. Now, I'm not saying it's not valuable. It's absolutely value. The Lions can now occasionally convert third and shorts because they have a running game. They can get him in better situations in second and threes instead of second and tens, but it doesn't make him a better quarterback. And so I think anyone that was hoping a running game would make Matthew Stafford a better quarterback, they were just kind of looking for an excuse. The thing that would make him a good quarterback is a group of receivers that play to his strengths and a scheme that fits his strength. And he hasn't had that really, I almost want to say, since Scott Linehan, which I'm not trying to praise Scott Linehan here. He had his own issues with being able to coach a quarterback into decision-making, but his scheme at least matched Matthew Stafford's skills. And that's what I think the Lions offense is missing right now.
Also, I would say, though, maybe one of you guys can jump in here, because you do say, I think you're right, Jeremy, when it comes to the point of that they're not really matching scheme to Stafford's strengths. But what would you say to someone who would say that if you're a good enough quarterback, you should be able to adopt to that system itself? Like, what to the people who would say, like, okay, I hear all what you're saying, but Stafford, if he is that good of a quarterback, should be able to adjust to dinking and dunking?
I don't think anybody on this podcast is going to say that Matthew Stafford is Aaron Rodgers or that Matthew Stafford is Drew Brees. Like, he's not part of that class of quarterback. Like, I feel like that there's a very few select group of guys who are scheme proof. Like, their quarterback talents rise above the limitations that are presented around them. Matthew Stafford has limitations. He has turnover problems. One of the most laughable things is a quick sidebar before you guys get into what you want to talk about. But during the game, when they were talking about how the Lions were effectively taking Khalil Mack out of the game, I was like, are they really? Because they're resorting to all this dink and dunk, really short passes that aren't working. So they're letting Khalil Mack have such a large influence on the game that they're changing their entire offensive game plan. Like, how is that scheming away from or making your offense not susceptible to Khalil Mack? Like, what
that's
the hell
not, are you talking about? That's not dictating what Khalil Mack does. That's Khalil Mack dictating what
that's
you
capitulating to what Khalil Mack does.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we should wrap it up here, right?
Like what kind of galaxy brain sports commenting is that?
We're going to have to add galaxy brain to our Pride of Detroit podcast drinking game, because I feel like we've mentioned it probably about six times in a row.
That's mostly on me. Someone the other day got in my mentions mad that I use galaxy brain as a very sarcastic thing. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. But it is a great way to describe people who are just, because the other term that I've always heard in my life is clever by half. Like, you're just, when you're just being too clever, when you're seeing too much in something that is too simple to explain, that's just galaxy braining it. Do we have any other words to describe that? Is there any other word to describe that phenomenon when a Fox commentator is going off like Ryan's talking about?
I mean, it's just simple overthinking, but that's not as fun to say.
No, it's not. It's definitely not intended for 2018 to just say he's overthinking it. You know what we are overthinking is the time on this segment. We're going to take a quick break here. I think that puts the kibosh in Stafford. We'll be back to the subject, I think, before long, because when it comes to the NFL and quarterbacks, you're always talking about them. I know Jeremy hates it, but we're always talking about them. Talking about the quarterbacks. We're going to talk about what remains. December is closing in. The Lions have, I believe,
five
more games to play. Thank you. I can count. And we're going to just talk about what's to come. What's to come for the future and future for this podcast, too. And we're also going to maybe look around the NFL. We are recording early on Sunday. I think the morning slate has, I mean, morning for the West Coast, I should say, has yet to kick off as we are recording. But maybe we can talk about the rest of Thanksgiving and just in general, what we're expecting to see out of the NFL as we close in the last home stretch of the season with the Lions fully out of contention. We will be right here, right back here, on the Pride of Detroit PODcast. Pride of Detroit PODcast back here again. We went long last time. We were talking a lot about Stafford and Staffording things. So we're going to talk a little bit and then we're going to get into the mailbag. So the Lions have five games remaining, five more games to play in the month of, is it December? Does the season go into January this year? No, it doesn't. Okay. Nope.
December 30th, last game. So five games.
There's actually five Sundays in December. Wow. I did not know that.
Wow.
Oh,
no.
We tried doing the Owen Wilson wow last time. It did not work out. I think we should leave it there. Okay, next week is the Rams, and that's going to suck a lot. But then you get two easy ones, going on the road, playing the Cardinals and the Bills. And I think they could possibly lose one of those games at this point, to be honest.
Yeah, someone I was on Toledo Radio on Friday, and they were asking me to kind of hedge my bets and try to predict what the Lions' record in the last five games. And outside of next week against the Rams, I think any game is winnable and also losable.
That's the terrifying thing. Like Lambeau Field at the end of the year is just not going to be fun.
I mean, who knows? I'm kind of guessing both teams are going to be out of it by then, so we might just have another useless Lions-Packers game like we did last year.
And more men is just not going to be fun because it's going to be cold as hell.
Well, yeah, I'm not going.
It should be illegal to play at Lambeau at the end of the year. We gotta put on this on a Notre Dame USC schedule that whenever one of these two teams plays to end the year, we just play in the dome or like in a warmer climate or something.
But I want to talk about how the rest of this season plays out, because I think we can all agree that playoff chances are gone. A 9-7 team could make it, and especially with how up in the air I think the wild card spots are this year, but no one expects this team to go 5-0 down the stretch.
Those
hopes are probably going to be dashed next Sunday. So the question becomes, how do the Lions treat the final month of the season? And while it's not likely that they're going to bench some certain starters just so that they can look at rookie players or young players, I am interested in what they do and what their goals are within the organizations. And I wanted to throw this question to you guys because I threw it to Pride of Detroit on Sunday morning, and that's Kerryon Johnson. So dealing with some sort of knee injury, we're not entirely sure what it is. Obviously, it's not an ACL tear. Obviously, it doesn't require surgery or the Lions would have put him on IR. My question to you is, now that the season is over and we've seen a little bit of success from LeGarrette Blount, should we hang up the cleats for him for the rest of the season?
This is where I'm going to get into trouble because someone got mad at me the other day because I insist that football should be played for the enjoyment of people. Mm-hmm. And in particular, this person got mad at me because I said that the happiness of an 8-year-old going to a football game to watch his favorite player outweighs any 30, 40, 50-year-old sitting around playing armchair GM thinking about the future. So I'm in a tough position here, but I would say I am also about player health. And if you want to wrap up Kerryon Johnson, I think that's fine. I also think he's young enough that if he wants to play, because if he wants to show, you know, he wants to prove that he's, you know, on pace to be an excellent rookie and have a bright future, then that should be fine too. I'm neutral on this question is what I'm saying. So I'm going to punt this over to Ryan.
Boo. Your team never punt. So that just really,
I am. Now I've got myself even further into a corner here. Wow.
I know. You are so far at odds with your own brand, Chris, that I don't even know if you know yourself.
I'm twisted and turned up right now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll take this and I'll give the answer that is the correct answer. Basically agree with everything you said, Chris, but you need to take the next logical step and say Kerryon Johnson should not play for the rest of the season, because how easy is it and how right is it to say, hey, 8-year-old who really loves Kerryon Johnson and got a Kerryon Johnson jersey for Christmas, he's not playing because he has a really bummed up knee and he doesn't want to hurt that further because he doesn't want to put his own well-being and livelihood. Yeah, he doesn't want to put his own livelihood at the chance at a second contract at risk. So if he takes the rest of the year off, there's a better chance that you can wear that Kerryon Johnson jersey and cheer for Kerryon Johnson for years and years to come, rather than have him go out and play in a meaningless football game.
Oh, you just call it meaningless?
Yep.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Hey, we did the guide on how to enjoy meaningless football games a few podcasts ago.
You can still enjoy it with it being meaningless. Just root for the field goal post.
Audible Dong we didn't even talk about that. Audible Dong did not show up well last week. On Thanksgiving. We're going to have to cut him.
Did not, but I'm really glad that somebody took it upon themselves to make that Twitter account.
before as we got off the podcast and you were like, "Hey, I should really go get that Twitter handle." Someone had already grabbed it.
Somebody already had it.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I mean, we're all talking about trading Matthew Stafford. Why aren't we talking about trading Audible Dong? Complete non-factor. Really blew the game, in my opinion.
But no, I think I'm with you, Ryan. There's definitely, you want him to come back strong. So, Kerryon Johnson, not Audible Dong.
Both.
I don't know.
I'm also kind of in the middle territory here, because on one hand, I don't like the message that you're sending to the team by benching him for the rest of the year. The problem here is that we're not doctors. We don't know how serious
this
is.
Are we all just terrified about running backs at this point in the NFL, where it's sure. if a season comes out like this, we're all afraid that there is a very limited warranty, like a 500-mile warranty or something on this on this purchase we have, and we're just terrified of taking it out and putting more miles on the odometer.
Wasn't this one of the pre-draft concerns about Kerryon Johnson?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's worth bringing up, too. Yeah, he's a guy who plays like a guy 40 pounds heavier than he is. He's a very physical back, despite being small in nature, and it gets him in trouble sometimes. I don't know if that was why he hurt his knee. And one thing I also don't know is if this knee injury is capable of becoming something much worse. I don't know if this knee sprain is capable of becoming an ACL now that, it's happened. I don't know if this makes him more vulnerable to a more serious injury. And those are really important factors that I think are going to play into the Lions' decision here. I also selfishly just want to see him play more, because he's, as I wrote today, he's literally the most exciting player on the team right now. There's no question about it.
You've got to find reasons to get people excited to come back to the Lions next year. I know there are some fans who will come back to the Lions no matter what. That's fine. Whatever. I know these people are probably the ones who are listening, and I hate to say it to you, but you are the least important people in this scenario. We need to the Lions need to figure out how to market themselves to a wider audience of people who are either more skeptical or need more convincing to come to Lions football games.
And that brings me to my next point, which is not what do you think or what do you want the Lions to do, but what do you think the Lions are going to do with Kerryon Johnson?
I think he will probably he's definitely not going to play against the Rams, I would think.
No, I don't think so either.
I think though he plays after a week or two. I could see him coming back in the Bills game and playing Bills, Vikings, Packers. Or maybe Bills, Vikings, and then sitting the Packers game.
Well, you definitely want to wait until at least the Bills game, because artificial turf is tough on the knees. So you want to wait till at least they go on to natural grass, right?
Yeah, but you know what's also tough on the knees is probably snow.
Okay, you guys totally jumped in front of my joke, because I was going to say, what do I think the Lions are going to do? I think the Lions are going to have some outdoor practices and Kerryon Johnson will be out there. Well, but we all should be fine with it, because, as Jeremy said, natural grass is easier on your knees than artificial turf.
Yeah, and I think there's little chance that they put him on IR or they rest him for the rest of the year. I do think it sends a poor message to the team if you're giving up on Kerryon Johnson. You're giving up on the season, and what does that mean for their own personal performance?
I thought I thought they already sent the signal giving up on the season when they traded Golden Tate.
I don't know if you heard Matt Patricia, but he said that was actually sending a positive message to the rest of the locker room that he believes in them.
Oh, come off it. Come off it. Wow, are you serious?
I'm serious that that was his message.
Oh, my God. My God. I said we just swore that we wouldn't use the term galaxy brain anymore, but oh my God.
What else is he going to say? I mean, that he has to sell that message to the team though, right?
I know he does. I know he does. That still doesn't make it great.
I think it makes it great in a different way.
I you know what? I agree with Ryan there. I absolutely agree with Ryan there. Is there anyone else we should be thinking about when it comes to this bubble wrap treatment?
It kind of mixes in with this discussion on Kerryon Johnson is that I think a lot of people want to see Tracy Walker play. And the reason why I think that we might not see it is because in this last game, Tracy Walker only played like 2 or 3 snaps while Glover Quinn played 100% of snaps, which to me shows you that they probably do bring Kerryon Johnson back because they think he's the better player and they're more interested in getting their better players out there than maybe planning for the future. But I don't know. It was interesting because I thought Glover Quinn probably played one of his better games of the year against the Bears, but we had just seen Tracy Walker, you know, have one of the best games of his young career, not just first interception, and then we see basically none of him in this game. And I don't know if that was a plan to stop the run. I don't know if that was just them getting their best players out there and not liking something they saw to Tracy Walker. But I think to me, almost every Lions fan is most eager to see Tracy Walker above anyone else right now. And it's understandable because the Lions secondary is in so much trouble and he's flashed some good things here and there. I just don't know if it's in the cards.
I'm not expecting Glover Quinn to be back next year, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think you're alone in that thinking just because of how hefty that contract is. And it just doesn't seem to me like he's meshing with the new system as well. And certainly part of it is age and speed and all that that seems to be declining with him. But it seems a little more than that, because in the years past, he's been put into positions where he can jump routes and make really good reads. We don't really see him doing that a lot. They put him in the box quite a bit. He's becoming more of a strong safety than a free safety, which doesn't really play to his strengths and is odd to me, but I don't know. I guess I'm very confused by what the Lions' current plans is for safety, because if they do plan on moving from Glover Quinn, which seems like the smart move to me, I don't know why Tracy Walker is only getting 5 or fewer snaps in some of these games.
Yeah.
Real quick, I was going to say, speaking of players who we're not really sure what the Lions are going to do with, even though we have a feeling of what we want to do with him, is Ezekiel Ansah, who mm-hmm. became the Lions' Thanksgiving Day sack leader in his career on Thursday. But it seems like at every turn where it seems like, you know, the team should just be done with Ansah, they should wash their hands with him, they should move on from him, and then he goes and has another productive day, and it's like we need to know that we've seen this movie before. And that you just can't trust Ezekiel Ansah to be healthy. So speaking of health and whether or not, I think we're going to see a lot of Ansah, because I think it's going to be a credit to him, because I think not only are they going to get a productive player out there, but they're also going to get they're also going to let Ansah put together some more tape for teams to look at for the free agency process, because I certainly don't want him back. He can be somebody else's problem.
This is just like Ansah. He's, you know, he's lazy for the first half of the season.
Oh,
and then when the writing's on the wall and free agency's coming, he's like, oh, I better get out there and start playing for a contract.
Yeah, there's some Twitter galaxy brain for you.
Ah, there's that word again.
Just in case it's not clear and didn't come through, that was all sarcasm.
Let's take a break here and we'll get to our favorite part of the podcast, the mailbag, where we take your questions here about Thanksgiving and maybe the Detroit Lions. We will be right back.
Mail time. shears the mill. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
Mail time. Hashtag ask POD. As always, get your questions in. We have everything from Twitter. I know we said we might have a thread up. I don't think we got one up, Jeremy.
No thread up on Pride of Detroit. We're just going
holidays. Holidays were rough on us. So we're going to take what we can. Real quick, just as a way to open up, how are your things? I think we talked a little bit about Thanksgivings, but what are you guys having as leftovers right now?
I still got a fair amount of leftovers. Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off there. But one of the things that I think is a little bit underrated that I didn't see at a lot of Thanksgivings in my past, but did at this Thanksgiving that I went to after the game, squash. Squash is an underrated vegetable. For people that don't like veggies and need something healthy in their life, look to squash.
I will say my only main experience with squash, and it's not even standard squash, but I tried doing paleo for a while, and I remember finding out about spaghetti Spanish squash, or spaghetti squash, if you want to call it, where you cut it open and the innards look like spaghetti, and you just dry that out, and I think you cook it up a little bit first, or
you cook it, and then basically you string it like spaghetti.
Well, it comes out stringed already. It's just that you have to like dry it out or something. Yeah. But either way, like that was beautiful. That, like, for me as an Italian American trying to do paleo without pasta, that was a game changer.
I do not have a whole lot left from Thanksgiving. I will say though that I went to the Flint Crepe Company, and this is the second time I've been, like, in less than a week, and it's probably one of my favorite restaurants. So if you're ever in the greater Flint area, you should make an effort to get over there, because I had a fall crepe. Like a seasonal crepe that had butternut squash in it. Very good.
Is our podcast now sponsored by squash?
Or the Flint Crepe Company. I don't know. I'm trying to access like all avenues. Like we're trying to get some serious revenue here. Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
Cut the check.
Cut some checks. Let's go to the mailbag then. We don't have much this week because I think most people, it was sent out on Sunday. B, I'm getting the feeling people are checking out. But we will see. Let's start here with this question from MagicMur20. What is the lion season summarized in a movie?
First thing that came to mind was Get Out. I'm just ready. No, that's not true. I'm not ready for the offseason because I hate the offseason, and I'll miss the football season like crazy when it's gone.
We forgot to do this in a previous segment. We should talk about the future of the podcast at some point. I'll make that a question here in the mailbag. Let's finish this one first.
But in the same sense, Get Out, I feel like I've sunk in the deep in place right now, where just like I'm going to wake up and suddenly I'm going to be a guy that wants to trade Stafford. I'm afraid of that to happen. That's going to happen just with how deep this Lions fan base is sunken right now, because I don't know. I feel like I haven't seen the fan base this depressed in quite some time. And I understand coming off back-to-back 9-7 seasons, you thought this season might be a big step in the right direction, even though I think all three of us kind of expected there to be at least some sort of a drop-off, especially defensively, which there is. But I don't know. I want to get out of this fan base sometimes.
Ryan? Movie?
A movie? Gremlins, because don't we talk about Gremlins on every podcast?
We do talk about Gremlins a lot.
Okay, for no other reason other than that. Can't even come up with an explanation or a reasoning as to why. But
I'm going to go out here, and I hate to sully this great movie with putting it near this Lions franchise, but it kind of reminded me a little bit of Casino right now.
Yeah, just the scene where Pesci and his crew get absolutely beat to shreds with aluminum bats.
Yeah, pretty much. There is a lot that you know is about to go wrong. And, you know, the guys you brought in, they're so fucking smart. How could it go wrong? You know? He's a smart guy.
Exactly.
And, it just feels like at the end of the movie, we're going to be, quote, right back where we started, you know?
Gonna
Yeah. Okay. Quick question from me then, executive question. How do you guys feel about starting up Draft Talk on the next podcast?
How do I feel about it?
Yes.
You know how I feel about it.
I don't.
I hate it, but I also recognize it's probably necessary.
One of those ugly realities of just the way that the season has played itself out.
Yeah. Pretty much. And guess what? Lions can't tank. They won't tank.
I think to help ease the pain a little bit, we're going to bring in some guests that are not only more knowledgeable, but more willing to talk about this sort of stuff.
I will say, though, it's kind of like just a little taste of what you could be getting in future podcasts when it comes to Draft Talk. We can cross one need or one position off the Lions draft list, and that's field goal posts. I don't think they need to draft any of those.
I don't know. Audible Dong's got to step it up. He had a couple of good games, but he needs to show me more.
Good games? I mean, it's like putting together a Hall of Fame career there for a minute for field goal posts. Like, how dare you?
Yeah, if there was a way to vote for
I need consistency
for Pro Bowl special teamer, like there's a special section in the Pro Bowl ballot for special teamers. I don't know why Lions goalpost isn't up there.
Well, speaking of which, we just got in a question from Will McPhee, and we'll get to the Audible Dong in a second. But like, yeah, as we said, we're going to bring in some guests. We're actually going to do guest work. Alex Reno is probably going to be back for his mandated one or two annual POD cast where he actually remembers that he's a member of this crew here. Probably Kent at some point, because he always brings in the numbers, which always makes my eyes glaze over, but he does that very well. The numbers, not making my eyes glaze over. And we'll see. Maybe more Brett. Guests. Maybe some Brett.
Yeah,
Probably some people from some of the other SB Nation college blogs, too. We're working on that. We got the connects. We'll get you connected up. Keep listening to the POD cast. I know Jeremy's going to hate talking about draft stuff, but guess what? Championship weekend's coming, and then bowl season. College football will be done soon, too.
What this college football thing you speak of is, but sounds interesting.
It just put together one of the most insane, ridiculous games of football I've ever seen in my life last night with 7 overtimes. The Texas A&M LSU game.
Oh. Dang it. I was hoping that was what happened in the Ohio State game, because that would explain why they had 50-plus points.
Ohio State had 50-plus points.
Say quite a few people on this podcast who don't want us to talk about college football at all whatsoever.
Okay. All right, next question.
Audible growl.
Audible growl. Feeling some way about Jim Harbaugh. Stop it. Will McPhee. I'm sick and tired of Audible Dong not being consistent. Should we trade him and draft a new guy? I don't care about the dead cap.
This is making me even more angry than Stafford Talk. How dare you?
All right, next question then. We're going rapid fire here. Migrant Caravan Insurance Agency, LLC, sending us this question. Great, great username. What's worse, falling on a grenade to save your enemies or listening to 97.1 for an entire day?
Lord.
This mailbag's redeemed itself. We're only a few questions in, but...
Let me say that just being self-sacrificial is a much greater honor, and you're doing yourself a greater service to humankind than having to listen to 97.1.
It depends on who your enemies are, but yeah.
Yeah, and as someone who loves to play the high road, falling on a grenade to save your enemies is like the ultimate high road move. And I'll take that to the grave rather than listening to Carson Anderson or anyone who that station has to offer. I feel bad for pointing out Carson Anderson, because back when I used to listen to them 10 years ago, they were the only tolerable ones. Now I have no idea who's there.
I used to feel the same way too, Jeremy, but they've reached a point where it's like, ugh, it's just as bad as the rest of the offerings that radio station has to offer. Although I will kind of, I'll defend Blenny a little bit, just because I do appreciate his perspective sometimes, and he actually has a podcast himself, but that he just started recently. But the rest of that station, fold it up, put it in the trash.
Valenti, come on the POD cast.
Yeah,
dong it off the Google post.
Basically what I was doing. Yeah. Take the rest of that station, fold it up into a paper football, and audible dong it.
All right, next question here from Randy Brown. Do you think unless the defense shows significant improvement over the remainder of the season, that Pasqualoni is replaced along with Jim Bob Cooter in the offseason?
That's an interesting question. And I think the answer is no. I think Pasqualoni was not a stopgap. I don't see any indications that he was unless Matt Patricia simply didn't have enough time to build his staff. And granted, he'll be able to get a much earlier start on it this year than he did last year. I think it's a question worth asking, though. And to me, we've already seen some defensive improvement that I think is worth noting. I mean, especially defending the run, right? I mean, we can put some of that on Damon Harrison, but if we're being real here, he only played about 50% of the snaps against the Bears. So that is starting to spread across the entire team. And they've only given up what? They gave up 20. They really only gave up 17 against the Bears, and they gave up right around there last week against a good Panthers offense. So I think we are starting to see some defensive improvements. Probably not where we want it to be, especially with the secondary playing as bad as they are. But wouldn't you kind of just blame that on the secondary players more so than the coaching?
Maybe. Yeah. To an extent, I think. I wonder, I think the only way that maybe, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, or if you think that this is wild, but I think the only way you don't see Pasqualoni back is if Patricia decides to maybe take over that role himself.
I hope he doesn't do that.
I hope he doesn't either, but I'm saying like maybe the possibility there might be real.
Yeah, I guess so. I just feel like the dude already has a lot on his plate, and I don't.
Clearly.
I don't,
clearly.
And I'm not just making a Thanksgiving fat person joke because that's
me. I didn't even take that there. I was just taking it there because his team is 4-7 garbage.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't think a lot of people are happy with Pasqualoni, but the thing that he has going for him is that he knows Patricia, knows the system. And that's kind of all that I think Patricia wants out of that guy.
Next question here from Max at the Honolulu Blue. If you could choose a dream team of NFL commentators for a Lions game, who would they be?
I know Jeremy probably would have said Gus Johnson until yesterday happened.
I was at a bar and I didn't even hear much of any of the game. So I don't know. I think I am starting to reach a breaking point with Gus Johnson, though, where he's just like he's trying to make a 3-yard out, like a Hail Mary completion.
Yeah, he's doing, you know what it is like, I think what it is that another, Joe Tessitore tried to do that kind of stuff with Sunday Night Football. I think we realized that he's being, that thing that Tessitore was doing is incredibly lame. And so we are retroactively now applying that to Gus Johnson because now we've kind of like, the veil's been lifted from our eyes and that style of broadcasting isn't as cool as it seemed.
Here's what I want, and maybe this is the revolutionary coaching that broadcasting needs. Let's bring in Gus Johnson for the 2-minute offense. Just bring him in at the end of each half. Do play by play.
Bring him in like a wildcat commentator.
Yep. And for the rest, we just got Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth. I'm fine with that.
Can we get Vern Lundquist? My answer is get Vern Lundquist out of retirement. Get him out of the Vegas casinos where he is getting in just incredibly drunk. Have him call a game. And for color, I don't care. I'm off my Chris Spielman kick, so.
What?
I'm going to do, for my answer, I want Kevin Harlan to do the play-by-play.
That's a good one, yeah.
I mean, just because he has that incredible call from 49ers Rams from 2 years ago, remember?
Well, he's got a great voice, too.
Well, he had that call when the fan ran out of the field.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was on radio for that, too, if I remember.
Yes,
Westwood. He was on the Westwood One broadcast.
He was on Westwood One. But yeah, him for play-by-play, for color. Can I just put him and Dan Miller in the booth? And I mean, I don't mind if like they're just, it's two play-by-play guys, but they'll figure it out.
I do want to point this out, and I know his name is probably, again, not a name that Jeremy wants to hear right now, or one that many people care about, because this is an NFL podcast, not a college football one. But Paul Feinbaum, I thought, had a great interview with awfulannouncing.com, where he said the thing he hates most about color commentators, I'm really here with him. The one thing he does not like about color commentators is when they are just carrying water for certain coaches and players. Like he talks about this a lot in college football. It's like these color commentators who say, you know, a coach who they know is going to get fired is doing a great job out here. And he thinks that's infantilizing and unnecessary. And I'm kind of there with him. I want a color commentator who's not going to, and I know why they have to do it, because color commentating is definitely about pleasing a lot of people, especially those coaches. But definitely I want a color commentator who's going to cut through the ball.
You know what I think would really improve the broadcast is, you know how, I don't know if ESPN still does it, but they had like they had Jay Feely as their special teams announcer. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep, they brought him in like when there were like kicking situations going on.
Yeah. I don't know why that's necessary, but if you're gonna go that way, like go the full nine yards and go get Pat McAfee.
Hmm. McAfee would probably cuss on air though.
Oh, absolutely. that's why you go and get him. Like, the College Game Day crew, didn't they let another shit slip during one of their recent broadcasts and everyone just loved it?
So yeah, anyway, probably.
Just I will throw out a half-assed excuse 30 minutes after Pat McAfee says bitch or something or motherfucker, and then Everyone's moved on with their lives.
ESPN's got a ton of money. They can pick up that FCC fine.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I will say, like, the one bright point of the new Monday Night Football crew, which has been largely a disaster.
Oh, goodness. But
I do appreciate Booger.
Booger riding the cart or what is he doing during that broadcast?
It's weird. Like he's like a second color guy, but he's also supposed to be like their on, like not even their on field guy, because I think they kicked that to someone else. Is it Christine Anderson? I don't remember. No, she's I forget. But either way, like he it's weird. They don't have him in the booth. They have him down on the sidelines, but at the same time, like. Yeah, he's on a trolley, but like Jason Witten is just so bad, he has to jump in every now and then.
Oh my God. Okay, yeah. If anything, Booger McFarland is saving us from some of Jason Witten's incompetence and just like calling defenses where it's like, yeah, they're gonna run cover two here, and then like four corners drop into zone. It's like, oh, okay. But the one thing about Booger, and I'm not trying to body shame, but like, can we figure out a way to like just fix his finger, please?
I guess are they all jacked up like Calvin Johnson?
He has a pinky that is at a 90 degree angle.
Oh, I've seen this picture. Yeah. Oh.
It's in literally every shot though. When they go to talk to him, he talks with his hands. So he brings his hands up to camera level and it's just like, ah, Booger, man, your fingers are just, they're like tree branches.
Can we maybe get some direction from producer so he does the talking with your hands just with the non jacked up hand?
Maybe, or just like wear the oversized hands from It's Always Sunny character.
I was gonna say, or we do the Whose Line Is It Anyways gimmick where somebody like they use somebody else's hands behind them. Yeah,
I mean yes. that's the cost of playing football, and I feel for him because that's gotta be pain
too.
But like, yeah,
like I'm surprised no one hold things anymore.
I mean, it's a pinky. It's kind of extraneous. I'm surprised no one here has said Tony Romo. Are we all over Tony Romo like we're over Gus Johnson?
Dude, I feel like
if we had done this question one or two years ago, it would be Gus Johnson with Tony Romo in a heartbeat.
I'm not over Tony Romo, but I will say it seemed like he was so generally apathetic about being at the Lions game on Thanksgiving. Like he felt like it just sounded like Tony wanted to be at home. Like either he had a real rough Wednesday out at the biggest bar night of the year, or he was just so genuinely disinterested in everything that was happening.
Maybe he's just realizing, oh crap, I did not mean to get into this job and have to do this crap on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I don't have enough Tony Romo experience. I like what I've seen,
most
but
people, most people have been turning on him because he does that, like, oh, wow, wowee kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's good at calling out things before it happens, but he also has a lot of just filler. It's just nonsense.
Yeah.
Okay. This was a great question. I love it. Ryan Collins at Shafty Von Hack. When does a Thanksgiving food coma go from adequate to pathetic?
It's weird. I didn't really get a food coma this year, and I kind of went ham on, no pun intended, on Thanksgiving food. What I am suffering from a very much hangover effect, though, is playing backyard football on Friday morning, because I am a mess right now. Like, I feel like I was just involved in a 9-car pileup, and I wasn't driving a car. I was just standing in the middle of it. I'm old.
Any thoughts on this, Ryan, man who was just profusely bleeding from his nose about an hour ago?
I want to say the most deplorable thing that I did on Thanksgiving in terms of that was I had leftovers at like 1:30 in the morning on Thursday night. Like, after I got done shopping, yeah, I stopped by my parents' place because I didn't have the wherewithal or the thought process in my brain on Thursday morning when I woke up after festivities on Wednesday to like take Tupperware to their house. So I couldn't take any like leftovers back from my parents' place. So I like stopped there on the way back and just made a huge plate at like 1:30 in the morning and then fell asleep.
So you were done shopping on Black Friday by 1:30 in the morning.
Yes. Well, I went out Thursday at like 6 o'clock.
You disgust me.
I know. I hate it. It's so dumb. I don't know why I do it.
This is an intervention.
It's a tradition. I should start up different. No, it wasn't worth it. I bought one thing.
Whoa! Myself. So you waited. Hold on. You went out at 6 p.m. Yep. Until 1 a.m.
Yep.
To buy one thing.
That I bought at like 7:30.
What was that one thing?
I don't even want to say.
No,
it.
I think this will make and break your decision. I want to know.
It was McDonald's unsalted fries.
If it was that, it would have been so worth it, and I'd be bragging about it right now. I bought a headset for my PlayStation. It was half off.
Wow.
It was $25, normally $50.
All right,
Nick Schramm. Nick Schramm. Last question, I'll let you guys play Fortnite or whatever the hell you want to do, because, like, yeah, Jets Pats just came on my TV. Last question from Nick Schramm. How accurate do you think this is, and how close do you think the Lions are? So he attaches here a tweet from Daniel Jeremiah at Move the Sticks. Checklist for building a roster in today's NFL. QB, 1. Pass rusher, 2 of them. Offensive playmaker, 3 of them. Defensive playmaker, 3 of them. Quality O-line, 3. That's where I'd start. Once you fill those 12 spots, you'll have an outstanding foundation.
So how many of those do the Lions have?
Like, but this thing that he's saying here is, like, that's always been the checklist.
Sure.
Okay. Like, that's always been the checklist. I'm not sure why this is, okay, whatever. Anyway, yeah. How close are the Lions? Well, they definitely don't have the pass rushers.
Yeah, I would say pass rusher, they're at -2. So
they need 4.
Yes. they have the quarterback. Offensive playmakers, they have, I don't know.
I think they have 2. In Kerryon Johnson and Kenny Galladay.
See, I'm still only willing to count Kenny Galladay as a half.
Okay. I understand that.
Yeah.
But Marvin Jones doesn't make up a second half to you?
You got to have it, but that's the thing. Like, I think when he's saying offensive playmaker, we need 3 individuals, not 6 halves.
Right.
Yeah, no, but I mean, if Marvin Jones was at full health and playing, I think that you could count Galladay and Jones as 2 halves and Kerryon Johnson as a whole. So they still need 1, clearly, right?
Yeah.
I mean, without Golden Tate, what has this offense done? I've been wrong about that.
Defensive playmakers, which is surprisingly separate from pass rushers. So, I mean, you at least have 1 run stuffer with Damon Harrison, and you've got Darius Slay.
I count Darius Slay.
I don't know if I would count snacks, because I don't think you view as a run stuffing defensive tackle as a defensive playmaker. I think you need a guy like JJ Watt or Khalil Mack, as we were saying before, that literally dictates how the defense plays. And while I don't think this is Darius Slay's best season, I think he's really been battling injuries all year, and I'm willing to bet he rebounds next year. But I think defensive playmaker, I would say they only have Darius Slay right now, and they need two more, whether it's a pass rusher or another cornerback or a linebacker, the likes of which we're not quite getting onto Jared Davis.
And last part here, quality O-line. So this is where it's going to get weird, right? Because we've seen this O-line kind of go up and down, but we're also at the point where I don't think TJ Lang is back next year. And
right.
I don't know what's going to happen with Rick Wagner.
This is the weirdest one on the Daniel Jeremiah list, because to me, your offensive line is only as good as your weakest link. And I know that's kind of a cliche, but it's also very true. So I don't really believe that you need three quality offensive linemen. I think you need at least five average ones, and preferably one or two great ones. And I think the Lions have four above average ones right now. And like you said, that one missing piece on right guard with TJ Lang, who was an above average guy, I would assume he's not around next year. So they're going to need at least one there.
So, like, what do we make then of Taylor Decker's, like, career trajectory so far? Because I noticed you didn't list him in there, because I remember he had, we're talking about one of this guy was like one of the great rookie years there. And I don't know how you feel about that.
I almost think you want to count like Decker as a half. To be honest, I thought that there were only really, I think, two quality O-line guys, like, if you want to count on them, like, and Decker is a half, so maybe like one and a half, but like I
don't like your half system.
Sorry, it counts to me. I don't know, whatever, but I like Ragnow. I have a lot of faith in Ragnow. I think he could be like the solidifying force. Like, I mean, he's a rookie, for crying out loud. Like, I mean, we're only seeing like the tip of the iceberg with that guy, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm good with Glasgow. I'm good with Ragnow. Decker, I think, is fine. I think people tend to really hate on left tackles a lot, because when they mess up, it's very noticeable. I think he's been okay.
It's a tough job. It's a thankless job, I think.
It's a tough, thankless job. That's exactly right. And while he's certainly not played to the level that we had hoped we saw flashes of in his rookie year, I still think he's an average left tackle, which is good enough. And I don't think the team's success or failure is being decided by him right now. So I'm happy with him at left tackle.
All right. I need a silly ending for this podcast. We've gone way too long.
The Lions don't need an extra audible dong. They've got one already.
Thank you for listening to the Pride Detroit PODcast. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Our main theme was produced by Brian Shepherd. You can find him on Twitter and on SoundCloud at I Am Brian Shepherd, IAMBRIANSHEPARD. Thanks a lot to him. Check out his stuff. He's been great. He gave us Victory Monday, so go check him out. That's I Am Brian Shepherd. And thank you for everyone who keeps listening and makes us one of the greatest Lions podcasts possible. Y'all are awesome. See you star side.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.